They say in the United States, food travels an average of 1,500 miles from where it is grown to where it is eaten. That leads us to ask, can city people close the distance to their food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, yes, and welcome to the 1351st edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in St. Petersport who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com, Spotify, or who knows where else. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, we begin with Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. If, as they say, the average food in the United States travels 1,500 miles from where it is grown to where it is eaten, then we city people simply do not have much control over what is in our food. Let's consider, by way of example, shopping for some garlic, which can easily be found in almost every city grocery store in the land. So approximately one-third of all the garlic that is now being sold in the United States was grown by farmers who grew it 5,000 miles away. That's a third of all the garlic now being eaten. The reason so much of the garlic we eat comes from so far away is that it costs less to grow it there and ship it here. When we shop for garlic and see that the garlic that came from so far away costs so much less than the garlic that was grown here, we have to wonder, being ever the food skeptics, what is in the garlic that makes it so cheap? Well, we do have the good intentions of those distant farmers who are growing our garlic. We also have all kinds of certifiers and inspectors with their rules and regulations that stand between those farmers and us. But when it comes right down to it, how much can those who do stand in between really protect us against all that distance? How much can that garlic farmer who is 5,000 miles away care about people who will be eating the garlic? What if that farmer decides that it will cost a lot less to dry the garlic over a coal-burning fire, even though the smoke from that fire would contaminate the garlic with mercury? It could save time and money, and make the garlic a lot less expensive and more competitive. Sure would be tempting. And how much can all the food safety guardians, rules and regulations really protect against all the money that could be made with all that distance? Those of us who live in the city have two choices, when shopping for food at least. We could buy the cheap food that comes from far away, or we can find ways to close the distance to our food. And so we ask, how can city people find food with its farmer's face on it? Well, we have somebody who has an answer. His name is Alan Moy, and he is the executive director of the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association. Alan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael.
So, do you have an answer? How can city people find food with its farmer's face on it?
I think that for everyone, the first choice is to think about, you know, what is a priority to you? What is important to you? Like you were mentioning your example of garlic and the potential health risks depending on how someone chose to preserve that garlic. So if your family's health is something that's very important to you, then you need to be thinking about how do I find the most healthful options for them? I know for others, they're very price driven because of their potentially their household income. So they need to be seeking out how can I get the best food possible for my family at an affordable price. In our world, operating farmers markets here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we like to think that your local farmers market is a solution to both of those questions. There you can go and find very healthful food. You can have a conversation across the table with the person who is involved in growing it, who can tell you more about the process that they use and how long it took to get that product from the field to that table. And you can also utilize programs that many of the farmers markets across our state operate that help people who are on public benefits, such as CalFresh, to be able to afford more healthful fruits and vegetables on a regular basis. So we think that there is a very important role for our state's farmers markets to play in hopefully as a solution to every family's question about how do I best feed my family.
There it is. Are there any other ways to get that close so you can actually look into the eyes of the people who are growing your food? Are there any other ways of getting that close?
There are a number of farms throughout California, and we are so very lucky to live in a state that still has a very active agricultural program and an agricultural sector that is focused upon people, not simply producing commodities such as mass quantities of wheat or other grains or cotton that that dominate agriculture in some other states. So many farms have opportunities for you to go onto the farm, and you can either purchase at a farm stand that's there along the roadside, many of them during the season when they are ready for harvest will do U-picks. I know here in the San Francisco Bay Area, the community of Brentwood, when cherries are ripe, that's a huge draw for people to come from all over the Bay Area to climb up the ladders with their families and pick the cherries themselves that they're going to eat. If you want to travel a little further from the San Francisco Bay Area up into the Apple Hill area, very similar. A lot of farms, when apples are being harvested, invite people onto the farm. So there's an opportunity not just to talk to the people who grow the food, but actually walk that ground, smell that air, and really get a feel with all of your senses for where your food is coming from.
So in actuality, there's a number of different ways for city people to get really close to their food. It just requires getting up off our bottoms in front of the computers and getting out and getting it, which means a little bit of extra effort than just simply walking through the doors of a grocery store. But what you get may well be worth it. Alan Moy, Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association. Now, very auspicious day for you personally, 20 years today, correct?
Yes, that's right. 20 years ago today, I walked up to the door of the office for my first day on the job, found the door locked and no one in the office, and had an immediate panic attack. As it turns out, the organization was much smaller at that time, and the entire staff was at a market grand opening. So about 15 minutes later, someone who had been stuck in traffic racing to get back to welcome me finally arrived and opened the door for me. And so I was able to start my new career in the farmers market world 15 minutes late, but 20 years ago today.
Well, that's pretty cool to be able to work someplace for 20 years and to see such incredible growth as you have. But surely you must have a recollection of your greatest moment or two that you could relay that would bring little Alan Moy to the surface for us?
I can remember, and I had take a lot of pride in some of the farmers market that I was directly involved in helping to get started. So when you're able to see something move from an empty parking lot into a vibrant community space where shoppers are purchasing food for their families, and farmers are able to then generate the revenue that they're going to be able to put back into their communities and put back into producing next season's crop. There's an incredible sense of accomplishment when you can see that transformation take place. And I've been feel very lucky over the years to have been involved in a number of those new market openings and transformations of those communities, and to see how those markets continue to thrive today, both for our farmers and for our shoppers.
Well, as you had all of those great experiences, I'm sure you must have had some misadventures that would also give us a little bit of light into your career there. What would be your greatest misadventure at the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association?
I would say I would describe it as the biggest stress that we feel is that there's so much outside of our control. We do our best to, create safe and fun, inviting environments for our shoppers, but strange things happen. You have, people who accidentally, run into the farmer's market barricade at the end of the street, or branch falls off a tree, or, we have a worldwide pandemic that we weren't expecting that suddenly gets people concerned about what does it mean to go to my favorite farmer's market when it's typically crowded on a Saturday morning. So those kind of stresses about all of the things that directly impact our ability to bring markets to communities, but they're so far outside of our control. Those are the things that cause the most ongoing concern for me personally.
Good. Well, I suspect, the pandemic is probably one of the biggest situations you have to deal with, as everybody did. We have a couple minutes before our break. Would you give us a quick thumbnail of how you manage that?
So I have to give credit, first of all, to Governor Newsom and Secretary Ross at California Department of Food and Agriculture, because early in the pandemic, they publicly stated that our certified farmers markets were essential businesses, and that gave the direction to all the counties throughout the state that farmers markets should be allowed to stay open. At PCFMA, prior to the pandemic, we had an ongoing partnership with a number of different hospitals that brought farmers markets to their campuses. These were small markets, generally for the people who were working in the hospitals and for some of their patients who were coming through. But they were a great way for a number of our farmers to be busy during the week when so many of the most popular farmers markets were on Saturdays. Right. But of course, once the pandemic hit, and the hospitals needed to direct their resources towards the pandemic response, all of those farmers markets had to shut down. And so that was an incredible change in the way that we organized ourselves and in the opportunities we were able to offer to a number of our farmers.
Well, kind of a sad one too, especially for those in the hospital, because I suspect that they really enjoyed the opportunity to be able to get out in the fresh air and buy some local food. I suspect that they're pretty health conscious when it gets right down to it, those who work in the health industry. So we're going to take a quick break here in a minute, but when we come back, we're going to get into the whole logistics of setting up markets and what is a certified farmer's market, because it's something that really provides the opportunity for we city people to actually look into the eyes of a farmer, and as I like to say, see what's in the food, because you don't get that opportunity in a grocery store to get that close to the people who actually grow our food. And that's the subject of today's Food Chain Radio program, is closing the distance between us and our food. They say it comes from 1,500 miles away. Doesn't leave us much control over what's in our food, but if we can look into the farmer's eyes and see what's in our food, we'll have a lot of control. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Alan Moy, who's been with the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association for 20 years today. Right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, today, What's Eating What is we are getting close to our food so that we can have much more control over what's in our food. When it comes from 1,500 miles away or 5,000 miles away, we just have to accept whatever. We don't know. There's no control. We have a lot of people that are there to protect us, but they have distractions too. And when we can get so close to the farmer, we can look into their eyes and get to know them, and we become kind of part of their family, their community. We're their customers. We give them money. They give us food. It's a one-to-one relationship, and it's as close as you can get, I think, other than growing your own food. And who has time for that? Not many city people when it gets right down to it. Alan Moy, executive director for 20 years today of the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association. So take us a little bit on a run through the world of farmers markets, because you are certified farmers markets. So let's start with, what does that mean?
Well, the certified farmers markets is something that is particular to the state of California. It's been in place for, I think, over 40 years now. And essentially, it means that the farmers that are selling their product within a space that it has been certified, those farms have been inspected by their county agricultural commissioner. And they are provided with certificates that list, these are the items that we can verify that you are growing on this land that we have inspected. And they bring that certificate with them to the farmer's market, post it up behind their tent. And the only things that they sell are those products that are listed on that certificate that are growing, that they're growing themselves on the land they control. So that is part of that. Our promise to the consumer is that within a certified farmer's market, you are buying directly from a California farmer, mm-hmm. that you're not buying something that has come off a ship from 1,500 or 5,000 miles away, but you're getting something that that farmer had a direct active role in growing, harvesting, and then transporting to your farmer's market for you. So that certification is an important part of keeping the integrity of our food system very strong, because it creates that direct connection between the farmer and the consumer. And it's something that we, and as a farmer's market operator and the other organizations like ours throughout California, take very seriously, and that we work really hard to enforce so that we can continue to have a lot of confidence and pride in our farmer's markets and the products that they are able to bring to our local community.
So Alan Moy, from when you folks at the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association are going through the market and you see a farmer from Willows selling pineapple, you do what?
First thing that we would do is ask to see a copy of their certified producer certificate, which they are required to have on hand. Our process at our organization is also that we keep a copy of those in the office, and we make those accessible to our staff at the market electronically, so we can always do a second verification. If there's anything on their table that looks suspicious, we photograph it, ask the farmer to remove it for the day, and then we will either schedule a time for some of our staff to visit their farm to verify that that is in fact something that they are growing, or we'll make a referral to either California Department of Food and Agriculture or to the county ag inspector where their farm is located for them to do a follow-up inspection. And that's important to ensure the ongoing integrity of the certified farmers market system.
And the integrity is something that everybody in the marketplace counts on, because we want to be certain that we are very close to our food when we go to the farmers market. And that's part of your job as an association of certified farmers markets to guarantee that integrity, for which most everybody's appreciative. And then CDFA, or California Department of Food and Agriculture, assists in this whole world, and they're part of it then. And it's California's the only state that does this?
They're the only state that has a system that is as robust as this. I think there are many other states that are supportive of their farmers market industry. You know, it's very different in a state like California, which is so large and has so many varied growing regions, that we can have farmers markets that are robust year-round with just food from California farmers. But if you think about the size of our friends up in New England, where the states are much smaller, they have a much smaller growing season, it's much more likely that in order to get their markets full with a wide variety of produce, they would need to be pooling from farms that will be crossing state lines. So in other states, they will set up their systems differently to find that balance between giving consumers enough variety that makes it worth their while to make a trip to the farmer's market versus their grocery store, but while also having integrity so that the customers who are coming to the farmer's market know that they're buying from a farmer. And in many states, it's that responsibility also falls to some private organizations where they are taking responsibility for doing more of those inspections themselves rather than relying on a governmental inspection, especially when they are pooling farmers across state lines.
Good. Well, let's look at your organization, Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association. You've been there 20 years today. That day 20 years ago when you first stepped through the door, or when they finally let you in at any rate, how many markets did you have then?
I believe at that time we were operating just about a dozen markets. I think probably that it was within a year or two we were more than 20. At our peak several years ago, probably about 10 years ago, we were approaching 70 markets a week, but quickly came to realize that that was stretching ourselves too thin. Prior to the pandemic, we were operating around 50 markets per week. But since a number of those that operated at our hospital locations closed and have many of them have not yet reopened, or at least not reopened under PCFMA's management, this year we're operating 35 a week.
35 farmers markets. 6 different counties in the San Francisco Bay region? That's a lot of geography there, isn't it?
Yes. When I started at PCFMA, I had just left a job where I was living in City of Concord and taking BART public transportation into Oakland every day, and then was excited that the office for my new job at PCFMA was just 5 stoplights away and was looking forward to not having a commute. But now I find myself spending more time on the road than ever because our markets cover such a wide geographic area. But it has actually been an incredible introduction to the various communities and cities within the Bay Area. So I've enjoyed that element of my job, too, is getting to know so much more about the place where I live.
Good. So you have 400 vendors. You have half of them are farmers, certified farmers, and the other half, what do they do?
So in addition to the farmers, we also welcome in local food artisans. So those will be bakers, those who produce hot food out at the market, very well-known and popular farmers market favorite of kettle corn falls into that category also. And we also have some that do some handcrafts, primarily things such as soap, and a few doing services like knife sharpening, which is very popular in the farmers markets. I think because so many of our customers are committed to cooking their own food, they recognize the importance of having really good tools. So they appreciate when the knife sharpener is in the market and they're able to get their tools touched up, because that means that whatever they're buying in the market that day, when they take it home, it's going to make that prep so much more easy.
And speaking of customers, 45,000 a week?
That is our best count as to about how many we are currently serving. It definitely changes throughout the year. This past winter, when we had so much torrential rain, definitely we were serving fewer customers per week, but it was always gratifying to see, even on stormy days, those true believers and fans who are still coming out to the market despite the rain. to shop with their favorite farmers. But now that we are again enjoying lots more sunshine, especially on the weekends, we are seeing our markets very full. And so, our best guess is that we're serving about 45,000 customers per week across all of our markets.
I got to say that my favorite time to shop the market is in the winter. I don't know. There's just something really special about it. Summers, of course, are fun, are kind of like a carnival without the bad food or rides, because everybody is very exuberant and happy and shopping and whatnot. You know, there's a very interesting difference between shopping in at a farmer's market on Saturday morning as opposed to shopping at a big box store. At a big box store, people are pushing their carts as if at war. Get out of my way. At the farmer's market, everybody's saying hello to everybody. It's just a different, it's like a pop-up carnival without the bad food. Am I off base there?
No, I definitely agree. I often tell people that if you just stand in a farmer's market and watch customers for a while, one thing that you will notice is when people run into their neighbors in a way that they weren't expecting, they're more likely to like reach out and hug. And when they do that in a grocery store, they're more likely just like to nod at one another. There's something about the farmer's market experience that really encourages that sense of community and togetherness. And I think that's something that so many of us crave because so much of our work and our life and our communications has shifted to these little electronic devices that we carry around. You know, this gets to be more and more rare that we have those face-to-face interactions, even with our friends and neighbors. So I think when those happen, and they happen in the farmer's market environment, which is a naturally like fun and welcoming place, it definitely has an impact. So I think there's an element of the farmer's markets that can help feed community and feed people's souls and spirit in addition to feeding their bodies.
Well, I would have to go along with that. Amen. Let's talk a little bit about how you organize yourself into an association that can manage all of these pop-up parties, markets. Come one, come all. But you have to go there at the specific point in time. I was thinking about it. Shopping at farmers markets are like hitting a moving target because they're there and then they're gone. So you have to order your life around that. And you have to order your association around serving that. So how do you organize serving so many markets, 35 a week, 4,500 customers? How do you pull yourself together, Alan Moy?
Well, Michael, I often joke that, you know, we have managed to create the best, most inconvenient shopping experience possible by only being open for 4 to 5 hours per week. And yes, you're right. You know, we are asking customers to come to us during this limited time frame. And, you know, we often get requests from customers for markets to open more than one day per week or to stay open for longer hours. But even with farmers markets, with the food coming from so close, so much closer than that 1,500-mile average, still we have farmers that are getting up while it's still dark to harvest, to pack, and then spend 2 hours on our freeways coming from the rural areas, the agrarian areas of our state, into our urban areas to sell that food. So asking them to spend, you know, more hours there when they still have to make that long commute back, just not something that we're really willing to do. So we really try to organize our markets around finding that balance between what works well for our farmers so that they can get to and from the market safely, and what works well for our customers that they can get there to get the food and have that farmer's market experience. And really the credit for all of that goes to our incredible team of market managers and their supervisors, our marketing team that helps inform people about what's at the market and when the markets are open. And then, you know, our secret weapon of all of our admin staff in the office who are faceless to many of our farmers and customers, but whose work, you know, keeps the wheels turning all the time.
And your job is to keep all their wheels turning, right?
Yes, that is a job that I have been tasked with. And, you know, I've been doing nonprofit work for my entire career. I started with an internship when I was still finishing my college degree, and then moved my way through a couple different nonprofits before finding my home at PCFMA. And so I've seen my job. There's a lot that I'm responsible for. So there's, you know, a lot of the legal compliance that comes with operating a nonprofit. There's the staff management for our team of almost 50 people. But, you know, in order for us to operate so many locations across such a wide geographic range, and with the number of different programs that we operate to really help people who are struggling financially to afford food, all of that only works because we've also made an investment into technology that helps to keep all of our team members connected and get them access to the information that they need to be making smart decisions about how to make their markets better by, you know, bringing in new farmers as farmers finish their seasons, as their crops end, so that we can continue to keep our markets full and our customers happy.
Lot of work, lot of information. Holy smokes. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Alan Moy, who is the executive director of the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association, serving 4,500 people every week with food with its farmer's face on it. When we come back, going to learn how to build a successful farmer's market. It's easy. Just turn on the key and away you go. Right back.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
Are you nearly maxed out on your credit cards? It doesn't matter if you're using your credit cards for fun or to survive. At the end of the month, your statements come in, and you can either pay them or you can't. If you can't, late fees and interest rates get tacked on, and now you're struggling just to make the minimum payment due. Do you feel trapped? Am I talking to you? Good, because I personally researched some companies that can help you. They may be able to reduce your credit card balances by 50% and stop the late fees. If you qualify, please call our special debt hotline number right now for a complimentary, free 5-minute consultation. Deal with your credit card problem now before it gets much worse and put more money back in your pocket. Trust me, I've been there too. Call right now.
800-948-6896. 800-948-6896. 800-948-6896. That's 800-948-6896.
When your business is on the move, you must find the right place for it to move. Move it to the right place with the help of the power brokers at J.R. Parrish in Santa Cruz. Let's ask Matt Chelton, general manager of J.R. Parrish, the big question. What about the terms of the lease?
The terms of the lease is where we really prove our value. I mean, where a tenant goes is often like an eye test. They pick the location that's best for them, but then creating a lease document that's fair or advantageous to the tenant or owner is our job. To go in there and figure out what they pay for in addition to the rent, how long the term is, what happens after the initial term, who pays for what in terms of operating expenses of the building, what kind of limitations you have on that. That's kind of where we get involved because of our background. We do this every day. Our tenants do it every 3 to 5 years.
When your business is on the move, move it to the right place with the help of the power brokers at J.R. Parrish in Santa Cruz.
JRParrish.com.
The wife says the boat's got to go, no problem. Stores at Anbar Self-Storage in U-Haul, easy off Highway 1 by the airport. 24-hour security for cars, boats, and RVs. Store it away at Anbar Self-Storage in U-Haul in Freedom.
You made the products, now you have to deliver.
Anbar Self-Storage and U-Haul has the moving vans, shipping boxes, and packing materials you need to deliver them. Easy off Highway 1 on Airport Boulevard by the airport. Anbar Self-Storage and U-Haul in Freedom.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain radio program. Michael Olson with Alan Moy, who's been with the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association for 20 years, 8 years of which he's been the executive director. And so we're going to ask him, how do you go about building a successful certified farmers market? Should we start with location, location, location? Because that's what all the realtors say.
Definitely location is key. You want to find a space that where the customers will feel comfortable coming and where you can have the logistics in set up in such a way that it's supportive for the farmers. If you imagine that they're coming in with their large box trucks full of food that they've harvested in a very dense urban area, like, it can be a challenge for them to find a place to park that truck for the 4 hours that they're selling in the market. So we try to be thoughtful about how do we find that space that really works well for the back end of the market, of that transportation and setup that the farmers need, things that the customers don't see, while balancing what the customers want. Whenever we can find a space that has other amenities like local shopping, dining, coffee, those are things definitely that make the experience for the customers even better. But we have found ways to make either one successful because we have markets in town squares that are surrounded by shops and restaurants. And we've got farmers markets and parking lots where it would be a bit of a hike to get to the nearest resource. So either one can work. It's just a matter of finding that what that community wants and then bringing in the farmers and the food products and the other items that really will appeal to the people who will be coming to shop that market.
Good. And now let's talk about your customers, because you made mention that you have some surveys that could tell us about who is buying food with its farmer's face on it.
Yeah, so part of our process for a number of years, surveys of our customers. We try to do it about every 18 to 24 months, just kind of a pulse check to see what are our customers thinking about the markets where they're shopping? What are they happy with? And what are the places where they are telling us that they would like to see some improvement? And so we just wrapped up our most recent consumer survey, and we're still in the process of hashing out all of the data. But so far, we're very pleased with what our customers are telling us. Generally satisfied with their farmers market experience. Essentially asked them to rate their markets on a scale of 1 to 5, and our average across all of our markets is a 4.23, which puts it into the better than the satisfied range. And they're also saying that most of our shoppers shop more than twice a month, which is really what we want to see, because that's telling us that the farmers market is a part of their regular routine, because that's really what we our farmers need to be successful are those regular week-to-week sales. And so we have customers that are not coming, just once a month or a couple of times a year, but coming multiple times per month. That really makes a difference in the sales that our farmers can count on.
What we need is something more than dilettantes that just show up once in a while. We need some serious shoppers here to make this really work well. And you're finding them, evidently. Now, what do people complain about when they complain?
So, one of the perennial complaints, unfortunately, is about dogs in the market. We are lucky enough to get the complaints from both sides, both those who think that they should be allowed to bring their dog wherever they want, and those who don't like seeing animals where any type of food is being sold. So we have to gently ask our customers who like to bring their dogs in to not do so, or at a minimum, to keep them away from the food. And we have to, unfortunately, tell our customers who don't like the animals that because we're actually not a legal authority, we don't have the ability or the right to remove someone from our farmers markets because they brought their dog in. All we can do is encourage people to, follow the rules and, help to create a space that everyone feels safe and welcome.
And do you have any figures on average spending for your customers?
We do. So what they've said is that on average across again across all of our markets, they're spending about $48 per market visit. When we did this same survey 2 years ago, it was closer to $43. So we have seen an increase over the past 2 years. Part of that could be due to the food inflation that we have seen throughout the food system. But part of it could also be as more shoppers choose to make more of their purchases at a farmer's market, that spending for some of them is slowly creeping upwards.
Yeah, it's creeping up for everybody, no matter where you go. What do you see personally in the evolution of your customers over the years? You've been looking at them 20 years.
It's very interesting that what customers have been asking for has definitely changed significantly over time. And it's been most evident in the markets that we do within the city of San Francisco. There was a time several years ago when the community wanted their own farmers market. And we would go to a gathering of some local residents, and they would say they wanted their own farmers market. We would point out that there was one a few blocks away. And the response often that we would get is, oh, but that means crossing such and such avenue. And that's another neighborhood. And we prefer to stay on our side of such and such avenue. So that did lead to a proliferation of some smaller markets, more markets. And then over the next several years, as there was turnover in a number of those communities, as people moved in and out, some of those smaller markets became less popular as people started making the decision that rather than shopping in my own neighborhood, I'm willing to travel a little further to a larger market that has more variety. And so we definitely have seen that shift in terms of what customers are looking for in terms of their farmers market experience. And that's something we try to, it's hard for us to measure because we're always looking at the farmers market from the inside. So but trying, it's something we do try to understand, what is it that our customers want? How is that changing over time? How do we make sure that we can continue to be relevant to them so that they continue to see the farmers market as the place that they want to be going on the weekend?
Good. Now, who or what or who's your ideal farmer?
Our ideal farmer is someone who is living on the land where they're growing, because someone who is living and raising their family on the same piece of land where they're growing the crops that they are bringing to you, that's someone that we have confidence is going to be taking really good care of the land, the water, the air, all of the natural resources on their farm. Because if they want to be, they're taking care of their child or their family by the way that they take care of that those natural resources. So to us, you know, that is the type of farmer that we love to be able to support. As farmland gets more and more expensive throughout California, that unfortunately that's becoming more and more difficult. We have a number of farms that are having to lease several small plots in order to have enough land to grow enough food to make it cost effective for them to stay in farming. That's, you know, a huge challenge that we as an organization don't have a solution for. It's one of those big macroeconomic challenges that's facing our state just in terms of land cost and access to farmland. But otherwise, you know, we really love to have farmers in our market who understand the importance of connecting with their consumers, as you've been talking about, you know, knowing the face that's growing your food. We love to have those farmers who show up to the market themselves, who take pride in their food and have no problem like bragging about it to their customers and sharing with their customers, this, if I were buying this eggplant today, this is what I would be doing with it tonight when I got it home. Those are the kind of farmers who can make those connections with the customers that really help to build that sense of community in a farmer's market and really encourage those customers to come back week after week.
And I suppose the farmers you would least like to host would be the opposite of that then.
Yes, you know, we've unfortunately have had some challenges with a few farmers over the years where we've, you know, encouraged them to play by the rules, to work in such a way that it helps to strengthen the market as a whole. Unfortunately, not everyone comes to the market with that type of approach. And so we've had to, encourage some of them to find other locations to sell their food rather than at one of our farmers markets.
Good. I would like to get into the marketing of farmers markets because I think that's a significant obstacle or a significant challenge. How do you get city people who are in a routine to break that routine to shop at a moving target, like a farmer's market? So what do you do, Alan Moy, at the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association, to get us city people off our butt and shop at the market?
Well, the first thing that we do is try to make sure that everyone knows where the local farmer's market is and when it's open. Our marketing team has been utilizing a lot of direct mail lately. First week of August is National Farmers Market Week across the nation. This year, we sent out over 100,000 postcards to customers who live in areas around our markets, just so they know that there is a farmers market in their community. But we also know that the way that people are accessing information has changed significantly over time, especially the rise of social media. So we're also very active in trying to understand where are our customers utilizing social media, especially to find out about local events that, as you say, encourage them to get up off their seats and do something in the real physical world. And so we try to identify what are those social media channels that have that opportunity for us and to make opportunities for us then to talk about our farmers markets, introduce our customers to the farmers and the products that they have. And one of the ways that we've been doing that most recently that we're very excited about is a YouTube series called Beyond the Market, where our team is actually going out to farms and interviewing the farmers, doing incredible shots of the trees in bloom and the food in the fields, and packaging all of that into really short videos that so those who have not yet made that decision to get up off their seats and go to a market, while they're sitting there with their device in hand, can start to know who those farmers are. And we're hoping that that encourages them to make that trip and to a farmer's market. Because one thing that I truly believe is that there is a seductive element to a farmer's market. And if we can get someone in there and they will walk through, see what's there, experience it, maybe try a free sample of a strawberry or a fresh peach, that they will then begin to shop. First week, they may just buy a couple things, but then when they come back over time, I believe that they will continue to buy a little bit more and a little bit more as they experience it and as they learn that the food that they can get at a farmer's market just tastes better. And because it's fresher, it also means it lasts longer. So that means that they can stretch their food dollars a little bit, still have less food waste. So all of that kind of is how we are trying to think about pulling people into the farmer's market so they can experience it, and counting on our farmers to help add to that experience so that those customers want to come back week after week.
Wow. If you were to pull all that together into one call to action, what would it be?
You know, it's a challenge because we recognize that people come to the market for different reasons.
Right.
And so it can never be a single call to action. Rather, we have to be thinking about who are our current shoppers? How do we encourage them to come more often? Who are the people who are not yet our shoppers, and how do we pull them in? We have been part of a statewide program called Market Match for well over 10 years. And that provides additional dollars to persons who are enrolled in the state's CalFresh program. So they can use their CalFresh benefits to buy script at our farmers market information booth, and we match their CalFresh spending. Currently, it's up to the first $15 that they spend on CalFresh with additional vouchers that they can use for fruits and vegetables. So if you're on CalFresh and you come to one of our farmers markets, you spend $15 of your CalFresh funds, but you've got $30 to spend. So the messaging to them is about that program, that opportunity mm-hmm. to stretch their food dollars.
That's
for
a,
others who have been becoming, for other reasons, you know, it's about how do we understand what their motivation is in trying to encourage them to come in if they're not being driven by the existence of a program like Market Match.
Well, we have a minute left, but who doesn't come to the markets? Have you identified them?
That is one of the hardest things for us to know. We know who our customers are, and we're able to reach out and learn more about them and what they want, what they don't want. But it's so hard for us to know who are those who are not our customer. And so we keep trying to strategize about how do we develop a system to learn that, but we have not yet cracked that secret. But if any of my colleagues out in the farmers market world have done that, I would love for them to reach out to me because I would love to learn that secret.
Well, we will figure that one out. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the 1351st edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Alan Moy. What a joy to work with Alan today. He is the executive director of the Pacific Coast Farmers Market Association. We've been talking about how we city people can get closer to our food, close the distance. A average food comes to us from 1,500 miles away. But what if we can look into the eyes of the farmer who's growing it and get food with its farmer's face on it? Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Michael. It's been an honor to be a part of this radio show.
A pleasure. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.